Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. This is Shane Banner with Brian Myers. And Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. Well, welcome back to another week. And Brian, how's your driveway doing?
It's better. You mean my car eating driveway?
Yeah, I pulled out of there the other week, you know, the other day, and I was.
You made it through.
I made it through. I was a little worried
because I have to call a backhoe to dig you out of there.
I don't have four wheel drive on my car, which sometimes I think, you know, is a necessity at some points in the year and with your driveway.
You know, this happens a lot out on the farm in the spring. I mean, it's just a terrible time of year where you're getting snow melt and then subsequently rain, and the entire driveway just turns into a swamp.
Yeah,
I've got about three truckloads of gravel I'm going to have to haul out there here and try to, you know, get it into some semblance of order here soon. But I'm glad for a little nice weather with some. Actually, the winds help too.
Yeah,
and blow that moisture out of there. How about you? What have you been up to?
Oh, let's see. Trying to think.
About 5'7"?
That's a big problem.
But, yeah.
That right there.
What have I been up to? Not getting enough sleep, probably. No. That's
every week.
Yeah.
That's old news, pal.
That's true. No, I just, it's just been kind of an ordinary week, really. I mean, not a whole lot going on. Nothing new to really report.
No problems with the cars. Nothing's blown up or nobody's hit it.
Nothing's blown up. No car accidents. No major car repairs. So we're golden.
Wow.
I know.
That's impressive.
It is.
I mean, normally there's some great tale of woe relative to your cars.
It's yeah, that's
every
true.
Week.
That's know? True. Well, we already talked about my birthday last week. So, you know, I feel a year older. Probably actually feel a couple years older, but you know, that's okay, and I can empathize with you,
Ron. I'm gonna cut that guy's microphone. Man.
I don't think I can do that.
Oh,
Tim.
Yeah. Speaking of cutting microphones, we'll get into this next segment. But somebody needs to cut Donald Trump's microphone. Anyway, that's not what we're going to talk about this segment.
Really?
Yeah. We'll talk about that more next segment. But I want to introduce a special guest we have on the line. He's probably thinking, what did I get myself into? State Representative Matt Winchittle. He represents the House District 17. He's from Missouri Valley, I believe. Is that right still?
That is correct.
Okay. And you are the House Speaker pro tempore, and you got to explain to our what that means to our audience, because a lot of people like me probably don't understand what the duties and roles of that position is.
Sounds like Chinese food, doesn't it?
You want, yeah, a little bit.
Pro tempore.
It sounds like the way you'd order something. I like that pro tempore, please. So, welcome to Company Thoughts Radio, Matt. You're probably thinking, man, can I just hang up now? So,
no, not at all.
Welcome, Matt. Thanks for coming on the show.
So, no, it is my pleasure. And just the easiest way to understand what that title means and what my job duties are, it is a leadership position. I'm basically the backup to the speaker. The constitutional way it's understood is if there's ever a vacancy in the speaker's office, I would fill that vacancy until a new speaker is selected by the body elect. As far as just functionality during session, it's, you know, when the speaker can't be in the chair because of her duties take her elsewhere, mm-hmm. I will preside over the chamber. You can put anybody up in the chair, really, but mm-hmm. it's just I'm kind of that backup person. I do serve on a leadership team and help try and make sure the priorities of Iowans are fulfilled from the Cox's standpoint and from Iowan's standpoint. So it's another opportunity to serve not only my people, my caucus, but also the entire body of the Iowa House.
Sounds great. You have been a champion for the Second Amendment in the Iowa House. When I think of gun bills that come before the Iowa House, you usually have your fingerprints on them. And there were five bills that were passed this week out of the Iowa House, and that'll be hopefully not sent over the Iowa Senate to die, but unfortunately what usually happens. What can you describe what those bills are and you know, why they're important to our rights?
Oh, absolutely. You need to get a little history on what we've been doing in the Iowa House for the past five. Now this will be the sixth session. Ever since we took the majority in 2010, and we actually receded in 2011, House Republicans have been looking at every way possible to enhance the freedom of violence by advancing Second Amendment rights and allowing Iowans to have the responsibility to make decisions for themselves, how best to protect their families, and to make sure that we have laws in the books that protect Iowans in exercising those abilities. Some of those bills have been, one was a constitutional amendment that I still fundamentally believe that we absolutely have to get in our state constitution that mm-hmm. protects Second Amendment rights in the state constitution. We passed that quite a few years ago, and as you said, it went to the Senate and died. We've had suppressor legislation many years running now, and that's one of the bills we passed just on Tuesday again. We've had permit privacy, which will protect people who have a permit from having their information just kind of data mined at the local county sheriff. We've seen instances in other states where media outlets actually went out, went to the issuing authority for whoever was issuing permits in that location, mm-hmm. found out everybody that had a weapons permit or a permit to carry, and they went and made interactive maps online where anybody could go to a specific neighborhood and go, oh, this guy on, you know, 222 West Huron, Matt Winchell, he's got a permit.
Yeah,
we don't want anything like that happening in Iowa.
Right. I remember when the New York Times did that. That was pretty mm-hmm. outrageous. Even, you know, even I think New Yorkers were upset that happened.
So we've, you know, in times past, we've also worked and passed Stand Your Ground out of the Iowa House. And I also believe that is something that we absolutely should have on the books. That being said, I mean, that's part of the history of what we've been trying to do. And a lot of those things have fallen on deaf ears in the Senate. And they've just, well, all those things, issues have died because of the Senate majority. This last year, we had, the approach we took was an omnibus approach. We had multiple different issues. A lot of those issues were some of the bills we just passed this last Tuesday. We had them all in one big bill. Was trying to negotiate that. I'd sat down with the Senate majority prior to session, sat down with law enforcement groups, and we thought we had a good package. Well, come to find out, there was only one or two people that actually were trying to get something done over there and giving nice lip service to the bill, and the rest of them kind of kowtowed to their more liberal members
right.
in the Senate.
Well, there were a couple. Well, there were a couple bills that actually passed with some, you know, I think was overwhelming bipartisan consensus. And that was House File 2283 that dealt with carrying a loaded weapon on a snowmobile or ATV.
Yep. And then, that brings us forward to where we're at now and what happened Tuesday. So, because the omnibus bill failed last year for numerous different reasons, but the main one is Senate Democrats do not support Second Amendment rights as a as an entire majority. There are a few people in there that want to see this stuff get done. Mm-hmm. What we did this year, the methodology was, let's break that omnibus bill down and let's make it individual pieces so that way the Senate, in their infinite wisdom, does not have to make a political decision to vote to strip portions of it out and be, you know, less on gun rights.
Right.
Let's just give them some standalone bills and make a smorgasbord. Take your pick, Senate. Which bill do you think is actually a good bill for Iowans? And I think they're all good bills.
Mm-hmm.
For the five bills that we were able to move up through the Judiciary Committee process and get to the floor of the House, I'll just run down them real quick. We've got the suppressor legislation again. It's really good language. We've been working on it for years with Iowa Firearms Coalition, the National Rifle Association, American Suppressor Association. We've had it vetted through all the legal minds and scholars that are out there.
Right.
We've got suppressor legislation. We've got the Parental Rights Act, which removes this archaic law on the books that says a parent can't teach their child under 14 proper handgun safety.
Right.
It's just ridiculous because in this exact same code section, just a couple paragraphs above, it says a parent can teach a child of any age how to shoot a rifle or a shotgun. And when I say rifle or shotgun, we're talking AK-47s, AR-15s.
You know, right.
The firearms out there that people usually classify as those weapons that are just used for, you know, terrible purposes, right?
Right. The assault weapons, as I hear.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Which means absolutely nothing. But, okay, go ahead.
Yep. So we passed that, and it takes the power away from the government and puts it where it rightfully belongs, right back in the hands of the parents. So we passed the Parental Rights Act. We passed the ATV bill, which in 2010, when we passed Child Issue, this was kind of an oversight that there were regulations on the books that didn't specifically allow someone to be able to carry a loaded firearm on an ATV if they had a permit to carry. The other more egregious part of this is if you're a farmer or you've got a bunch of land and you're checking the back 40 and driving the fence line, doesn't matter whether you're on your own property or not. Right now, you're not allowed to carry a loaded firearm, so you can't put your six shooter on your side. Go check the fence line. That's just
you're kidding.
Terribly. Yeah, no,
that's current. That's currently prohibited.
Prohibited. Yep. So that we needed to clean that up. So we had the ATV and snowmobile bill that specifically states if you have a permit to carry, you can carry a loaded firearm on that ATV or snowmobile, but you're not going to be hunting from it. So it's not where you're getting on an ATV and going to go try and round up some deer with your buddies and then hunt from the ATV. That is still strictly prohibited. But it also states that if you're on your own property, there's no need to have a permit at that point. If you're on your own property, you can carry a loaded weapon. So we had the ATV bill. We also had the emergency powers reform. And this is one where more of the liberal mindset goes, why do we need this? Basically what the bill says is that if we ever find ourselves in a state of emergency in Iowa, that the governor and other political entities, political subdivisions, your county board of supervisors, things like that, they cannot arbitrarily go out and say they can't put further restrictions on your Second Amendment rights than what are already, in place at that present time.
Well, and liberals might think this is far-fetched, but this is exactly what happened in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So what I've noticed is that Democrats in particular tend to emote when it comes to these types of bills. There just doesn't seem to be some logical thinking that's going on from their side when it comes to gun control. They just want to. It seems like they're not even talking about the substance of the bill.
Well, speaking of which, Matt, let me ask you: are you winning some minds over with respect to folks in the Senate on suppressor legislation? I mean, that okay? Talk about that a little bit, if you wouldn't mind.
The reason that I can say yes to that is when we began this discussion on suppressors 4 or 5 years ago, everybody had the Hollywood mentality that these are, weapons for lethal assassins to use, or these are tools for lethal assassins to use. We've helped educate people through this process. At the beginning of session, I sat down with the Senate President, Pam Yoakum, and this topic got brought up about what Second Amendment bills might have a chance. And she, without me encouraging it, she said she thought that suppressors was something that could actually get done in the Senate this year. They passed the version of the suppressor bill last year, but the language, I disagreed with the way they had the language crafted. And so that's history now. But so there are minds that are changing over there, and so that's positive encouragement.
So you think, you may have a win?
Out of the House, I've been told the suppressors is probably one of the more likely bills to get on the governor's desk.
Okay,
good. Well, and a lot of people don't realize, I mean, a lot of this is just, it's for personal protection for those firing the weapons, too, because a lot of these people speak out against this, probably have never spent any time on a gun range, and don't realize how loud, these weapons be.
No, it's the mentality of what they've seen on TV.
Right. It's not a silencer. It's just there's just a lot of misconceptions about what a suppressor actually does. So
absolutely,
we got about 3 minutes left, Matt. What else do you think might make it the distance?
Well, the fifth and final bill that we passed on the floor passed 97-1, and it is the portion of the omnibus bill last year, with few exceptions, that deals with streamlining the permit process, the renewal process for those permits to carry, but it also puts in that permit privacy. The short and sweet of it is, do I like how everything is crafted in that or constructed? No, I think it could be done better, but it is the art of the possible.
Right.
There are a lot of different organizations out there that have said, we don't like this piece or that piece. There's legislators that say, we want to craft it this way or that way. So in order to try and find a manageable approach where everybody can agree to, which 97-1, I'm pretty sure that's indicative that most people agree with it.
Yeah.
That's the bill that we have before us. And I think that one has got a great opportunity getting on the governor's desk as well.
That would be great. As far as we interrupted, you were going to say something about suppressors, if you remember now.
I do remember. The one thing that I bring up and I tell people, and they kind of, it's surprising them. There's actually, in European countries, they actually require you to use a suppressor when you're hunting. It's to cut down on noise pollution. And here's the funny thing. For anybody that watches Downton Abbey, I don't regularly, but I had a roommate down in Des Moines.
Right.
Sure, Matt. Likely story.
No, I'm serious. He watched Downton Abbey. Well, I'm flipping through the channels at home one night, and I come on to Iowa Public Television. And it's a whole series about how they maintain that estate in times right now. And they're talking about one of the game wardens out there that actually lives out there. They don't ever mention suppressors. They don't say anything about them. But they show this gentleman getting out of the back of his truck, getting his rifle ready. He's going to go out and thin the herd. He's just screwing on the suppressor on the front of his gun. Nobody says anything. It's just, okay, they just accept it because it's actually part of a safety device. So it's just a little tidbit of anecdotal.
That's interesting.
That is interesting.
I didn't know that about Europeans, and they tend to have very strict gun control over there. Mm-hmm. This is definitely, if somebody just take time and educate themselves, they would realize this is a safety bill. It's not going to empower assassins to be able to go on a murder spree. Crazy.
And that's the other thing, that there has not been a recorded crime committed with a legal suppressor.
Huh.
Right? If somebody's gone out and made a homemade suppressor, that's a different story. But for the highly regulated way that suppressors are issued out there or that you can procure them, there's not been a single recorded crime of someone using a legal suppressor.
All right. We're out of time. Thanks, Matt. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, this is Brian Myers of Myers & Associates. If you're involved in maintenance at a manufacturing plant, you know how costly it can be when a machine goes down. And if the reason that machine went down is because the electronic controls on it failed, it can really be problematic if those electronics are obsolete. Well, not to worry. We represent Providence Industrial Electronics Repair, and they can get your machine up and running in no time. They repair boards, drives, servo motors, light curtains, you name it. So if you need industrial electronics repaired at your plant, or if you have other industrial maintenance needs, give me a call at 515-490-2640. That's Myers & Associates, 515-490-2640. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running.
Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Travis Riswold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029, and he can help you find the life insurance
you need.
So, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. And, hey, we had another debate, as we always like to do after debates, is to play some clips and talk about what happened. This is the last debate. This is the CNN Telemundo GOP debate. And it's the last one before Super Tuesday, or last debate before Super Tuesday, which has a gazillion states voting. No, I think like 14 states are going. Trump, by the way, is leading in 10 of those states. Last I checked, it might, you know. And
no,
of
that
course,
sounds
we'll
right.
We'll probably have some new polling that comes out. I have to. One of the first things I want to say about this debate before we play clips is I was very happy because Cruz and Rubio did not savage one another.
It's the first time for everything.
First time, and I think they're getting the message that they're both of their supporters don't want to see that anymore, mm-hmm. because the big elephant in the room is literally Donald Trump, and frankly, neither of them win unless they take Donald Trump down a few notches. Especially in the three-way race.
Yeah.
Eventually, you know, I think it's agreed that this is going to have to come down to a two-person race, mm-hmm. in order to knock Donald off as far as delegates.
You got to get down to two so we have enough numbers.
It's still going to be a hard hard road ahead, but it's more doable if with two people rather than three. And each, Rubio and Cruz will have to make the case why they're the person needs to go up against Trump. But it was definitely a pile on Trump. It was kind of a tag team situation between Cruz and Rubio. And I have to say, it was glorious. I loved it. But I want to we're going to sum up Ben Carson's debate in 21 seconds. Here's the...
You have the floor, Governor.
You
will have a response, right. But I promise Governor Kasich he could respond.
Can somebody attack me, please?
Okay. Okay.
poor Ben Carson. Because he ended up complaining about it down the road, too. I'm not getting enough attention. Well, because you finished dead last in the last three state contests, and everybody's wondering why you're still in it.
It still was the best line of the night.
It was still the best line. Because, it's those who attack and get attacked get all the attention, basically. So instead of saying, could somebody please attack me, what Ben Carson needs to do in the next debate, if he's still in it, and I hope he's not, is he just needs to pick a fight with somebody. That's all.
He does not have it in him to do that.
But he's still,
not who he is.
If he wants attention, that's what he's going to have to do. He's like, Kasich, you're ugly! or something like that. Trump, you're fat! I don't know. But he's just going to have to do something because everybody's just going to ignore him otherwise, because he's kind of a snooze fest during debates anyway.
All right, what do we got
next
here?
But he wants liberty and justice for all, as did Superman. So, anyway. I have to say, Rubio, I'm glad Rubio finally started attacking Donald Trump, because he's been avoiding, at least not, he hadn't named Donald Trump by name, but he definitely went after him. Cruz and Rubio have two different debating styles. Rubio could definitely be an attack dog. Cruz is more of a more of a lawyer type of debate. So the headlines kind of went to Rubio because it was pretty fiery. But here's one exchange, clip number one. This is, he's talking about the Palestinians, Trump and the Palestinians.
For whatever reason, I'm not able.
Okay, we're not going to play clip one for you. So, you got it? No.
I'm a negotiator. I've done very well over the years through negotiation. It's very important that we do that. In all fairness, Marco is not a negotiator. I watched him melt down, and I'll tell you, it was one of the saddest things I've ever seen. He's not going down.
He thinks the Palestinian is a real estate deal.
And these people may even be tougher than Chris Christie, okay?
The Palestinians are not a real estate deal, Donald.
Okay, no. A deal.
They're not a real estate deal.
A deal is a deal. Let me tell you, I've learned a long time ago.
A deal is not a deal when you're dealing with terrorists. Have you ever negotiated
with terrorists? You are not a negotiator. You are not a negotiator. And with your thinking, you will never bring peace. You will never bring peace.
Donald might be able to bring condos in the Palestinian areas, but he's not going to. This is not a real estate deal.
I want to be able to bring peace.
Okay,
we can. He will never be able to do it.
So that gives you a little bit of taste. There was a better exchange on health care. This is a longer clip, about 3 minutes, where Rubio and Trump just went back and forth on health care. And point goes to Rubio on this, I believe.
Yeah, we're probably going to have to just play a portion of
that. You may not be aware of this, Donald, because you don't follow this stuff very closely, but here's what happened. When they passed Obamacare, they put a bailout fund in Obamacare. All these lobbyists to keep talking about, they put a bailout fund in the law that would allow public money to be used, taxpayer money, to bail out companies when they lost money. And we led the effort and wiped out that bailout fund. The insurance companies are not in favor of me. They hate that. They're suing now to get that bailout money put back in. Here's what you didn't hear in that answer. And this is important, guys. This is an important thing. What is your plan? I understand the lines around the state, whatever that means. This is not a game where you draw maps
and you
around.
You don't know what it is.
What is your plan?
That's the problem.
What is your plan on health care? You don't have a plan.
The biggest problem he's got is he doesn't know. You know, I watched him melt down 2 weeks ago with Chris Christie. I got to tell you, the biggest problem he's got is he really doesn't know about the lines. The biggest thing we've got, and the reason we have no competition, is because we have lines around the state,
we already mentioned that as part of my plan. What that is. But what else is part of your plan? So your only thing is to get rid of the lines around the states. What else is part of your health care plan?
The lines around the states mean.
That's your only plan.
And it was almost done.
All right, that brings it to mind. He can tell us his plan.
Excuse me. That brings in competition. When you get rid of the lines, it brings in competition. So instead of having one insurance company taking care of New York or Texas, you'll have many. They'll compete, and it'll be a beautiful thing.
It'll be beautiful. It'll be huge. Okay. We can go ahead and stop that clip.
Now, he's right about that.
He is.
But this is the first time I've heard him actually describe it.
Right. But here's the thing. Everybody else's plans include that, too. And he's still not giving a lot of
he's not fleshing it out.
Yeah. And he's like, we'll have lots of plans. No, what's your plan, Trump? We'll just basically Rubio kind of handed off the baton to Cruz on health care. So we had, let's see, that is clip number 10. Let's play that real quick.
Donald, true or false, you've said the government should pay for everyone's health care?
That's false.
You've never said that.
No, I said it worked in a couple of countries, but
you've,
never
stood on this debate stage and says it works great in Canada and Scotland, and we should do it here.
Did
you say if you want people to die on the streets, if you don't support socialized health care, you have no heart? Did you say you're a liberal on health care?
If I'm president.
Have you said you're a liberal on health care?
Excuse me, let me talk.
Talk away. Explain your plan, please.
My plan is very simple. We're going to have private health care. But I will not allow people to die on the sidewalks and the streets of our country if I'm president. You may let it, and you may be fine
so
with
does
it.
The government
I'm
pay
not
everyone's
fine with
care?
It. We are going to take
yes
those people,
no.
and
just
they're
answer
get,
the question.
Excuse me. We are going to take those people, and those people are going to be serviced by doctors and hospitals. And we're going to make great deals on it, but we're not going to let them die in the streets.
Who pays for it?
Can I just clarify something?
Senator, gentlemen.
Okay. Please. Who's dying in the streets now?
Right, exactly. And here's the thing. It's like he wouldn't answer the question. Oh, well, that's great, Donald. Who pays for that? He wouldn't answer the question. Apparently, magic fairies will pay for this.
He never answers questions. That's what he does. He'll attack you and start calling you names. He'll go ad hominem on you, but he never gives you a substantial answer.
The fact is that Donald Trump has supported in the past during this election. So we're not talking years ago. Single payer health care,
right?
Who pays that? Government does.
That's right.
So,
what debate was that? I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
but
I don't remember. It was a couple debates ago that he brought that up.
But it's just been within the last month or two, has it not?
Yeah, this is something, and again, you know, I think Trump could end up, you know, muttering to himself and drooling on stage, and Trump fans, I think he does just beautifully. Beautifully huge. It was huge. It was a bigly. Oh, that was a new word he invented last night. Bigly. It was a bigly event debate
oh,
for him.
Boy.
So anyway, another instance where Trump got savaged. Let's see. Okay. Oh yes. I'm trying to look for it here. Play clip number 4. I think this is it. No, I'm sorry. Clip number eight.
But I also think that if you're going to claim that you're the only one that lifted this into the campaign, that you acknowledge that, for example, you're the only person on the stage that's ever been fined for hiring people to work on your projects illegally. You hired some workers from
Poland.
No,
I'm the only one on the stage that's hired people. You haven't hired anybody.
Well, in fact, some of the people...
Zing.
I've hired tens of thousands of people over my job.
You've hired
nobody.
1,000 people.
You've
from
had
another
nothing.
Actually, senators do hire people.
Let me finish the statement. This is important.
You haven't hired one.
He hired workers from Poland, and he had to pay $1 million or so in a judgment.
That's wrong.
For
hiring. That's totally wrong.
Well, people can look it up. I'm sure people are Googling it right now. Look at
Senator Cruz.
Trump, Polish workers. You'll see $1 million for hiring illegal workers on one of his projects.
Yeah,
he did.
You know, it's interesting.
That happened.
I've hired tens of thousands of people over my lifetime. Tens of
Many
thousands.
Many from other countries
be
instead
quiet.
Of hiring
Just
Americans.
Be quiet. Let me talk. I've hired tens of thousands of
All
people.
All right, we could probably pause it. Again, you know, Trump, there's a he believes I can interrupt you as much as you know, I like, but you when I'm talking, you don't interrupt me. That's I can't stand that. One thing I did love about Rubio, he's got to be careful about it though, is that he gave Trump a taste of his own medicine of being talked over and interrupted, and I think it did throw Trump off a little bit because he's not used to doing it. Cruz will go after Trump, but he's used to debate competitions, and he doesn't talk over people,
right.
And he's polite. Unfortunately, I think with Trump, you can't do that.
Yep.
You've got to go after him, and you got to have a.
And Marco Rubio really kind of walked
throat.
He kind of walked into it there just at the beginning.
Yeah,
he let Donald zing him good.
Right, but here's the thing: even though he does hire people, he's not. He still has to follow the law, whether he hires people or not. In an earlier exchange, that was clip four. Let's go ahead and play that. That's a short one. Rubio just threw a number of things at him.
If he builds the wall the way he built Trump Towers, he'll be using illegal immigrant labor to do it.
That was a good line. You got him there.
Such a cute soundbite.
But here's the guy.
It was a cute soundbite.
Here's the guy that buys a house for $179,000. He sells it to a lobbyist who's probably here for $380,000, and then legislation is passed. You tell me about this guy.
No
this
reference to what that's
the guy
talking
that inherited
about.
$200 million. If he hadn't inherited $200 million, you know where Donald Trump would be right now?
No,
watches in Manhattan.
I have to say, Senator, he lied this time. He lied. 100%. 100%.
Senator, you lied about the Polish workers.
Yeah.
You lied to the students of Trump University.
Ago. 38 Senator years ago.
Oh, he lied 38 years ago. All right, I guess there's a statute of limitation on lies.
That was beautiful. I have to say, my hat goes off to Marco Rubio. He had a fabulous debate. Let's see.
Kevin Hall said he'd gone en fuego last night.
Yeah. let's play. I think we got enough time to play the Cruz Supreme Court hanging in the balance. This kind of puts it all into perspective. What we need to be concerned about with Donald Trump.
Well, I agree with you that Justice Scalia's passing underscores the enormous gravity of this election. Justice Scalia was someone I knew personally for 20 years. Was privileged to be at his funeral this weekend, and with his passing, the court is now hanging in the balance. We are one liberal justice away from a five-justice radical leftist majority that would undermine our religious liberty, that would undermine the right to life, and that would fundamentally erase the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms from the Constitution.
Let's go ahead and stop there.
I think the voters...
So with the little time we have left this segment, you just need to consider... obviously, Iowans, we already have. Who do we trust with a Supreme Court nomination?
Absolutely.
Donald Trump or Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio? I think the choice is pretty clear. I mean, I think Cruz or Rubio are heads and shoulders above Trump in
Absolutely.
That regard. I trust Cruz more than Rubio, but I would trust Rubio in that
I agree.
Regard. So the main thing, folks, is... We got to knock Trump out, and I'm glad these two gentlemen did it. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries with Scott Owen, who offers biblical counseling and conciliation. Give him a call at 515-292-7141. And go to crosswalkcounseling.org. This is Shane Vanner with Brian Myers.
And it's now time for our news rundown, otherwise known as News You Can Use. Okay, first up, Harry Reid and Chuck Grassley go at it. According to Politico,
cage match.
Harry Reid unleashed a blunt and blistering attack on longtime GOP colleague Chuck Grassley, accusing the Senate Judiciary Committee chairman of ceding his panel's autonomy to Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and being an inept leader of the committee. Senate Minority Leader, furious over the GOP's plan to block President Barack Obama from filling a Supreme Court vacancy, publicly lambasted Grassley for refusing to meet with the president to discuss the vacancy this week. Grassley then subsequently responded, "Mr. President, yesterday the minority leader came to the floor to disparage the work of the Senate Judiciary Committee and the Senate as a whole. And, of course, as he does from time to time, he launched into a personal attack against me. That's okay. I don't intend to return the favor. I don't want to talk about the nuclear option and the tremendous damage it did to the Senate," which, by the way, Harry Reid quietly did twice.
Right.
"Or the years and years that Democrat senators had to endure under his leadership without even being able to offer any amendments. We all know that's just how some people act when they don't get their way. But childish tantrums aren't appropriate for the Senate." Take nice. That, Harry.
Yeah, that was nice. He had a good response.
He did. He did.
And by the way, his entire floor speech is up at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Check that out.
We were talking off the air about how Harry Reid's desk was kind of like a legislative hospice.
Yeah.
Because it's where bills went to die.
Right.
Okay, next up, this is from Town Hall. The Nevada governor says no thanks to the Supreme Court nomination. News broke that Nevada Republican Governor Brian Sandoval was being considered by the Obama White House to fill the vacancy left by Justice Antonin Scalia. Sandoval could have forced the GOP to move on hearings. Sandoval leans to the left of issues like abortion, but could have hit some bumps with Democrats since he's not big labor's best friend. But it's irrelevant now. Sandoval took himself out of consideration. And this is from via ABC News. Nevada Governor Brian Sandoval has taken himself out of consideration as a possible Supreme Court nominee to replace the late Justice Antonin Scalia. In a statement, Sandoval said, "Earlier today, I notified the White House that I do not wish to be considered at this time for possible nomination to the Supreme Court of the United States."
It would have been a slick political move by Obama to do that.
Oh, yeah.
It certainly would have forced the hand.
On the other hand, you got to wonder what guy in his right mind would want to take this position right now. As politicized as this thing is, can you imagine having to survive the confirmation hearings?
No, thank you.
I mean, shoot me now.
Yeah.
Okay, and according to Scientific American, Apple is hanging tough against the FBI as the deadline looms. Now, we're recording this on Friday. It's my understanding that the deadline that the FBI gave to Apple is Friday. So by the time this airs, this decision will be known with respect to whether Apple's going to play ball or not. But Apple has until Friday to either help law enforcement unlock a suspected terrorist's iPhone or formally challenge a court order demanding that the company do so. For the FBI has positioned as a technological compromise. The case has since become more about setting legal precedents between tech companies and law enforcement than about overcoming technological hurdles.
Yeah, I think it's... I have mixed feelings about this.
I do, too.
Because on one hand, yeah, I don't want Apple to end up making a back door that could get into iPhones, but I think they're saying they can't. Also, too, can you compel a company to use its resources to help you?
I'm much more concerned about that question there.
Yeah.
I don't like that door opening.
Yeah.
And, you know, it begs the question... I thought we had these incredible experts working
right.
for the federal government.
Why can't they do it?
Do they have to have Apple do it?
It makes me feel confident about my iPhone, though, I have to say.
Well, but stop and think about it. The United States does not have the technical wherewithal to
right.
do this without holding a gun to Apple's head.
There's, right.
I don't get that.
On,
we can put guys on the moon,
right.
but we can't open up this
It could be something like a language barrier, so to speak. They don't speak Apple's language. They don't speak that programming language.
That's
so
true.
That
were,
could be.
That's your on the flip side too. On the flip side, Cruz has noted, and I think believe Rubio has as well, that you know the Fourth Amendment protections have been honored. I mean, this is a legal court order subpoena, so it's not like they're violating anybody's rights necessarily.
Well, they've cooperated with investigations, at least 70 of them. Up to this point.
Right.
Yeah.
So, well, this is a slightly different kettle of fish, as I understand it.
Oh, yeah. Definitely is.
But on the other hand, I mean, there could be a lot of useful information from this one of the San Bernardino shooters' phones who's dead. So it's not like you're, you know.
I know they can get good information off this phone. I don't dispute that. I don't like the idea of the federal government holding a gun to the head of a private company and saying, you must do this.
Right.
I got a real problem with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that I don't want to get that information and get the goods on if there's a terror cell.
Yeah.
But there's ways to do this.
Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, if there needs to be some assurances that this is... And no proprietary technology be leaked. Also, too, probably monetary payments made to Apple, I would think.
I think it just sets a terrible precedent.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, next up from NBC News. Secretary of State Lurch still can't use the genocide designation for Christians being killed in the Middle East. Just a disclaimer here. NBC News didn't call him Lurch.
Yeah, I figured.
I just wanted the listener to know that. Fireworks erupted at a House Foreign Affairs Committee hearing Thursday when the nation's top diplomat was pressed on why the State Department has not branded the ISIS massacres of Christians a genocide. Secretary of State John Kerry agreed that something needs to be done quickly, but said they have to do more legal legwork before that designation is made. And apparently a very frustrated Representative Dana Rohrabacher, a California Republican and frequent critic of the Obama administration, said, the whole world knows Christians are being slaughtered in the Middle East.
Yeah.
He was not satisfied when Kerry said that the greatest threat to the U.S. is violent extremism, radical religious extremism.
Yes, because we got all these Christian terrorists running around.
That's right. And when he asked Kerry why he didn't use the words radical Islamic terrorism, Kerry quickly answered, it is predominantly Islamic, and I have no hesitation in saying that. But he did have hesitation in saying that.
Right.
Under further questioning, Kerry also noted that most of the victims of ISIS are other Muslims, and that Muslims are leading the fight against the murderous militants who have carved out a caliphate in Syria and Iraq.
And, yeah, last thing we kind of wanted to point out this segment is Americans apparently are feeling the burn. Looking at head-to-head polling, if you go to realclearpolitics.com, it's a great website. You can check out all the polls and the poll averages.
That is a great site.
They do head-to-head polling, general election polling. Right now, Clinton is not doing so well against the Republicans, with the exception of Donald Trump, and that's something that people need to be aware of. If this is a Clinton v. Trump contest, Trump is probably the least electable out of the Republican candidates. Everybody else is beating Clinton. Bernie Sanders, not so much. And if we could end up with a Bernie v. Trump, last summer we kind of joked about how this is the end of the Republic. We might be facing the end of the Republic, folks, because Bernie looks like he'll beat Trump if that's the matchup, and that's scary. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back.
You've prayed, but it didn't do much good. You still have the same problems, and God is not helping. Maybe you're not praying, but simply worrying to God. I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. God says for us to cast our anxieties upon Him, but too often we cast them like we are impatiently fishing. We toss them out for Him, but then we reel them back in to see why we hadn't caught anything. Better imagery is to cast them out as if we were feeding bread to ducks on a pond. The bread is out of our control once it hits the water, and there's no getting it back. God wants to offer you peace by taking your anxiety. Your best option is to learn to stop worrying to God and start trusting Him. To learn how to trade anxiety for peace, call Crosswalk Ministries at 515-635-5465 or online at crosswalkcounseling.org.
And we're to our last segment. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio with Shane Banner, Brian Myers. Check us out on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/CaffThoughts. Like us. We'd appreciate it. Follow us on Twitter. Again, twitter.com/Caff, C-A-F-F, Thoughts. And then, of course, go to our website, caffeinatedthoughts.com. Not only will you read our daily updates, but also if you've missed an episode of Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, the podcast is right there, so check that out.
Okay, our last segment here, we will be dealing with a item that was excerpted and edited from the Aquila Report. Evangelicals are losing the battle for the Bible, and they're just fine with that.
This evangelical isn't. Go ahead. Sorry.
I think the three evangelicals in this room are not fine with that. Okay. A.J. Zimmerman is a 25-year-old recent Divinity School graduate from Southern California. During high school, after learning about Jesus and the cross and this whole salvation thing, at a second youth group meeting, Zimmerman committed his life to Christ. He became a regular churchgoer and went on to attend Azusa Pacific University, an evangelical Christian college east of L.A. Since graduating from high school, Zimmerman has undergone a revolution in his thinking about evangelicals' foundational text, the Bible, to the extent that he no longer regards the Bible as inerrant, dictated by God, historically accurate in all of its claims, or even internally consistent with itself. "The Bible holds high authority in my life," Zimmerman said. "And yet," he added, "I think it's important to remember the intent and purpose of the biblical texts. These texts were not intending to portray exact historical fact, to show God, but to show how God is moving with history alongside people. If we understand the term inerrancy to be without error, then no, I don't view the Bible as inerrant. The scripture is not trying to be without error. It is trying to communicate the love God has for his creation." Oh, boy. In addition to this dismissal of biblical inerrancy, Zimmerman said he no longer believes the biblical book of Genesis is concerned with young versus old earth, literal days of creation stuff. He said biblical passages appearing to condemn homosexuality are products of their time and do not necessarily apply to present-day same-sex couples committed in a consensual relationship. The same goes for New Testament prohibition against women in church leadership. And here's the money quote. "Before my generation, it was like, if you don't believe this doctrine, you're undermining the work of Christ on the cross. My generation, however, is not as okay with the simplified answers." Simplified answers, okay? In other words, doctrinal truth.
Yeah.
These are simplified answers.
Right.
"Evangelical Christianity in America is in the midst of a wholesale generational, cultural, and doctrinal transformation. Confronted by a secularizing and diversifying society, evangelicals are abandoning long-held political allegiances, softening their views on sexuality, grappling with the racial divide in their churches, and rethinking their entire approach to ministry and evangelization. Underlying all of these developments is a more fundamental change in the way evangelicals understand and interpret their most cherished text, the Bible."
Yeah, a couple points of that last paragraph you read. Not all of these transformations are a bad thing. I just want to point that out. For instance, there's definitely been an emphasis on showing mercy to the poor and you know, loving our neighbors, that I think is important. That's something that we need.
And if there's a racial divide,
who can fall? I mean,
exactly.
That's something we've needed to address. However, you know, this guy said,
He's throwing hermeneutics out the window.
Right. He said, then the Bible's still my highest priority. Why?
Yeah.
If it's not inerrant, why?
Yeah,
if the Bible's not inerrant, why can you believe anything else it says?
The faith is over if they lose the scriptures.
This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.
Take care, everybody.